Sex Bob-omb, and we're here to make you think about death and get sad and stuff.
This is the beginning of the song. I hear voices, animal voices, the tremble of cold, the feminine abyss, reaching my threshold, staring at the truth till I'm blind.
Well, they tried to keep a zombie down. That didn't work. I pulled out my magical mystery. I'm not even going to give it a name, because if I give it a name, then it won't be there and next time when I need it. Because if I need it again, I'm probably going to need it again. And then it's just going to be some kind of freaking weird thing happening there. We're broadcasting with technical difficulties, which is weird as crap, but we're going to go through anyways. Tonight, we have a guest by the name of Mark B. Rakop. Ah, I had two ways to go with that. It was a Rakop or Rakop. And it's like, ooh, I knew it's got to be one of them. So let's try that again, Mark. How are you doing? This is a wonderful day. I'm blaming the smoke. It's all the smoke. Go for it. Say what you just said.
Everything is going really well here in North Central Indiana. We don't get the smoke that New York is receiving from the Canadian fire. And I'm so sorry to hear that you guys are enduring that. So hopefully that they will get that under control soon.
It's not so much that they can get anything to do with it. It's kind of what Mother Nature says to do it.
Got it. Right.
I know that some of the fires are out of control right now, but that is generally what happens in this time of the year. I know they'll get it done, but there will be people who lose stuff, and I feel bad for them and everything else like that, like a normal human would.
Oh, sure.
I mean, as zombies, we have no hearts and stuff like that still work, but we still care.
Nice.
Right? But
other than that, the rest of the day has gone fantastically well. We're working on lots and lots of cars. We're working on the museum and having a good time.
Excellent. So let's get into that part of it, because normally I would introduce what it is you do. And from what I understand, you make Dukes of Hazzard cars, right?
No.
Oh, wait. No, it's Starsky and Hutch.
Closer,
no, the Green Hornet.
Almost.
Ah. So does the B in your name stand for Batman?
It should, but it does not. It stands for Bradley.
Oh, I would have gone with Batman, man. Nobody else would have known the difference. I would have backed you up on it 100%.
That's awesome. But yes, you're absolutely right. It is Batman, and is the 1966 Batmobile, and that is what I build. And I built my first one way back when I was 17 years old.
Awesome.
With Chuck and Jack and some of your other listeners, we had five crazy 17-year-olds. We had no automotive experience, no automotive tools. We wheeled the car into being from a 74 Monte Carlo.
And now I am a little bit aware of your history with these things. And you're the only licensed replica manufacturer, maker, however you want, producer of these specific cars.
Right. We started building them professionally back in 2003, and we were on our eighth car, and the buyer bought it specifically to flip the car. So he took it to Barrett Jackson. It did very well on the auction block, and that got the attention of DC Comics, who sent a spy to my shop pretending to be a customer. He liked what he saw, reported back, and I found out about this much later after we got the licensing, but he reported back that he liked the accuracy level, he liked the quality level, and he liked that I would be a good ambassador for DC Comics and for Batman in general. And so if they were going to license anybody, that this was the guy, was his phrasing. So it was really neat to get that whole story. But it didn't start that way. It started as a cease and desist.
Yes, because I was going to say about IP properties and stuff.
That's where my friend Chuck comes into play. I was on the phone with him. He's a strategist, and we bounce ideas off of each other all the time. And he said, the problem from the letter is that you're not licensed, not that you're building Batmobiles.
Correct.
So I called the attorney immediately and said, how do we make this a win-win? And it took a little while, took some attorneys to be involved and the like, but finally they changed their minds, turned away from being a cease and desist situation, and they said, do you think Mark would consider licensing?
Cool. And
sure enough, 2 years later, we had a contract on the table and ready to go. So
excellent.
Who would have ever thought? Yeah. Well, Little Low Mark and Little Low Logan Sport and Little Low Indiana. Who would have ever thought?
Well, like, I have a comic shop, so I do things, and I read and find out about a lot of stuff, about statues and garage kits and whatever. So there's this whole thing called garage kits, yeah, where you can make a kit and sell it for profit only so long as you only sell so many of them. So if you only make 30, you're okay. You make 31, whoever the IP licensed property owners, they can sue your ass off.
Right.
So it's like, I was thinking, okay, you only made 8. So I guess, but I guess then it's also a magnitude of cash that's involved in the transactions too.
Probably so. And,
yeah,
and just the national attention that we were getting as well.
Free publicity.
Yeah, so it was fascinating to see. So I wrote 200 press releases and sent them out after we got the licensing. And then I was expecting the phone to ring off the hook on Monday morning after I came back in the office. It was crickets, Bill. It was absolutely nuts. And then at 10 o'clock that night, the phone started ringing. It apparently went viral in Australia.
Awesome.
And the interviews just kept coming, television and radio and newspapers and podcasts and all of that started at that point. And it was like 6 or 8 months later that it even began to wane. It was really a bizarre time, and it's continued off and on since then. But at that moment, that was what was going on. We had, I think, 30,000 hits of our website in one day, and the website could handle it, but the server couldn't.
So. Gee, I wonder what that's like. So we don't have a chat room today because our server is actually down right now for the regular standard, the way we're normally playing. But apparently I'm allowed to broadcast through this other method. So that's cool as heck. But I do have a little mini chat room where Jack, your friend who has actually been one of my longest listeners and comes all the time, has asked a question in the chat room. Is the original from, sorry, not the chat room, but in a personal chat. Is the original from the one that got wrecked on the way to the RHPS? I don't know what RHPS is.
Okay. And Jack, no, the answer is no, that the silver Monte Carlo, which was my mom's Monte Carlo, Chuck was driving it for in the worst snowstorm of the year. He decided to go to the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Good call.
I had decided not to go that night because the weather was too bad. So imagine my surprise when I get the phone call from the sheriff at about 1:30 in the morning saying, hey, would you come down and pick up these couple of guys that are they need a ride. And so I get down there, and not a scratch on Chuck or on my brother, Scott, who was also in the car. Neither one had worn seatbelt, which is absolutely a bad idea, by the way. But it was nice to know that they survived a wreck in the Monte Carlo that totaled the money, but they were perfectly safe. So that was one of the reasons why it led us to going to a Monte Carlo, just because of that particular incident. So we were not able to use that car. If I would have known then what I know now, I probably would have used it anyway. Frame straightening and whatnot could be done. But we bought another Monte Carlo, a blue one, and that's the one that we converted into the Batmobile.
Nice. And the original Batman, like the original Batmobile used in the movie's show and whatever, was that based on a Monte Carlo as well, or was that something else it was based off of?
Oh, it was a one-of-a-kind concept car. It was a 1955 Lincoln Futura concept car. A lot of people thought it was a lot of people thought it was a GTO, or they thought it was a Cadillac or something like that. But the reality was, it was the concept car. It was made in metal at the cost of $250,000 in 1955. About $2.2 million today's dollars. And that car is the Batmobile. They didn't have time to make molds and do anything else to convert it. They literally took the metal car, took off all the parts that they didn't want, and then added all the parts that they did to create what I consider to be the most beautiful car in the world. And then Barris made a fiberglass mold and cast three fiberglass copies. And he used, in 1966, four Galaxy frames for those three copies. So we came to find out that the Monte Carlo had way too short of a wheelbase. And that meant that the rear end was way too long and it would drag going up hills and things like that. driveways. So we made every mistake in the world on the Monte Carlo so that when we started building them professionally, we had already bypassed all of that. So we taught ourselves fiberglass work. We taught ourselves Bondo and how to apply the Bondo and sand it and all of that. As I say, we hardly had any tools whatsoever. We had a jigsaw, a circular saw, and a little 6-inch sanding block. And that was pretty much it.
Nice.
And a pop rivet gun that Chuck provided. And that was it. But we had built sets, we had built props, we had made two Batman fan films in high school, and we were gearing up to do our third one in college. I majored in filmmaking at Ball State University in Muncie, and I wanted the ultimate prop. I wanted the Batmobile. So that's the necessity that was the mother of the invention.
So the building of the Batmobile was before you did the fan films or whatever, or after?
It was, I'd completed two of them, and I was gearing up to do the third, and we were taking everything to the next level.
Ah. Doing
bigger, better sets, bigger, better cast, and things like that. So it was really a game changer in many ways. So I entered that in the David Letterman Scholarship Contest for the Telecommunications Department, and it won one of the awards that year. So that was a nice pat on the back from David Letterman.
Excellent. Did you get to meet him?
I did not.
Interact?
But I did receive a telegram from him.
There you go. Who still sells telegrams?
Yeah, well, that was 19...
Even in 2003.
85 or so.
Oh, 85.
And he still used telegrams. That was his best way to reach me, I guess, at the time.
Nice. Well, that sounds spiffy.
It was.
So... It's an interesting, like, for me, it's an interesting deal to talk to somebody who's building cars. I mean, I have a few friends who are mechanics and they do some stuff or whatever, but building a prop car like this, obviously you've gotten very professional with it and very, how do you want to call swift, or not necessarily swift, I want to say the production value's probably gotten much better over time. So do the cars that you're putting out now, I mean, I don't know how many you put out a year or a month or whatever. How long does it take to make one of these?
Pre-COVID, it was about 2 years to build each one. It's about between 2,500 and 3,000 man hours goes into each vehicle. Oof. So it's a huge amount of labor. And you can't just go into a local auto parts store and pick up a steering wheel for a Batmobile, for instance, and or a center console. So, you know, every part has to be hand-built. And even if we can have something, that, you know, CNC'd or perhaps water jet cut or laser cut, we still have to, you know, sand buff and polish it, or we still have to prime it and paint it and assemble everything. So literally every single part of the car has our hands involved in it. Now, post-COVID, because of parts delays and things like that, It's averaging about 3 years for completion. We complete an average of about two cars per year, but we are currently working on 9 cars that are all pre-ordered all at the same time.
Cool. And have you ever decided to do a show like California Choppers?
I want to do one. In fact, Chuck did the directing of a pilot, and Warner Brothers said you can do a little, but not a whole series. They said I could do one episode with the Batmobile, and that was it. Because I really thought that there was a chance of legs for a show like this, at least for one season, if not for two seasons, to talk about the different features of the car, one feature per episode, and to talk about the problems that we incur and have incurred. We started in 2003, so this September is 20 years of building Batmobiles on a professional level.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Everything from an air compressor exploding to not being able to get fiberglass materials because of COVID. You name it, it's happened.
Well, I could definitely see a single season, a mini season, like either 6 or 8 episodes or whatever. And I would watch that because that's about my attention, personally, my attention span on something that's like interesting, but necessarily too over the top kind of thing. California, right. Sorry, I don't want to diss California Choppers or whatever, but I don't get into it because I don't really connect with the people who are on the show because they just seem like I don't really care about them. The bikes are cool. The cars, I thought some of these shows are cool as well. But there's like, I don't really like them. But Batmobile, and having spoken with you now, I would get into it. I would actually watch it. I mean, I watched one show on Netflix recently that was 6 episodes. Like, the only reason I watched it is because in the trailer, they had one product. It was a collector show. They had one product that I was interested in. I didn't really care about any of the rest of the show, but I watched the whole thing. So it's like mild interest would keep me in for 6 episodes.
Very good. And you're right that they do become personality driven very quickly for the stars of the show. And if they don't attract an audience, then the show itself is going to die off because the interest, right. The original business or whatever, like Duck Dynasty or whatever, the interest in the business dies off very quickly. And it's harder to put together situations and things like that that make sense from a script point of view. But yeah, there are lots of stories over the years and meeting Adam West and working with him, working with Burt Ward. I got to fortunate enough to be able to work with both gentlemen, and that was an absolute blast.
And awesome.
Going to comic cons all across the country. Who would have ever thought that any of that would have happened? And it's all because of a crazy car.
Do you get paid to go to the comic cons? Do you become a guest, like a paid guest?
I'm usually they give me free space in the
convention. Oh, so you're comped. Hall.
So we're comped on that. Sometimes rooms, sometimes airfare. It all depends on that particular convention and what the scale is of the convention. But they let me sell photos of people sitting in the car.
Nice.
So
so you can make money on it.
Right. So in Washington, D.C., for instance, they paid for the transportation of the car, the airfare, hotel, and the space for me to operate. And we did, I think, $7,000 worth of photos in 3 days. It was a pretty crazy.
Cool.
Yeah. So it is more than just a toy. It is an investment. Yes. And these cars do generate an incredible amount of revenue and interest in them.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing. So I business stuff is something that I'm always interested in because I know that the craziest idea that can make Mega Millions the next corner is just like, hey, somebody put this thing together with that thing together and that thing together, and like, bam, you've got this thing that solves cancer. What? You know? It's like crazy stuff can be done in like a middle. It's the right thing, the right time, in the right position. You take it out of context and it's like it doesn't do anything. But at the right time, the right place, it's bangers. Now imagine how much more interest you'd have had in the thing if it was social media was like as YouTube influencer as it is now.
Right. Yeah, when we started this business, I did a video called Holy Double Vision in which we had, or was it Batmobile Delivery? Might have been Batmobile Delivery Day. We had 50,000 hits
nice. In
two weeks. And back then, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
Now that seems like so many people can do that very easily. But back in those days, this would have been 2006 probably. That was huge, and we sold 4 cars in less than 2 weeks because of that video.
Nice. Yeah, so, no, I mean, it's totally different since then to now. I mean, I've been into computers since about the 80s. We're about the same age, so I've got the same access to technology, and it's fun. But yeah, I mean, looking at viral videos some of these days now, it's like all these quick TikTok type things. It's like, how do you keep attention going on that? But that's not right. The point. It's just about getting in the quick grab and then following through.
And it's fascinating from an advertising standpoint
yeah. That
now everything has to be basically a meme or people won't be able to see it because everybody's looking on their phones instead of on computer screens. So now I don't do posters and things like that anymore because those days are done. Mm. So it really is a contrast to what I used back 20 years ago to advertise. You're right.
So do you use a lot of social media for advertising and stuff?
I do. We have a Facebook page, Fiberglass Freaks is the name of our company. And we also have a website. We're in the middle of moving over to a different theme. So things are a little bit wonky, but most of the elements are there. So people can check out fiberglassfreaks.com. But Facebook is really where most of the photos are, and that's where most of the activity these days is anyway. It used to be on the 1966 Batmobile message board, but that died off years ago and is pretty much dead.
Yeah, message boards.
Yeah, right. Still 66 Batman message board, and that one is still pretty lively with fans of just the show. And they venture into the Batmobile from time to time, but it's more about the props and costumes, things like that. It's pretty exciting.
Cool. And you notice I was very quiet there, allowing you to tagline all the names and stuff, because that's the important side. I know how this game works.
You put a lot of great people on those boards, too, that they're just as knowledgeable. Like, I'm a huge fan, of course, of the Batmobile, and I know every instance of the Batmobile and all 120 episodes. I've watched them on VHS tape and frame by frame by frame, and these guys know the costumes as well as I know the car. They know how many fiberglass cowl shells were made for Adam West and which cowl shell is in which episode because they recovered them and they repainted the eyebrows and the way they painted the nose.
Fandom can be intense.
Indeed.
But it's fun. Timeless fun for the most part. You get a few weirdos that do stuff. It's like, dude, just chill. But the most part, like 90% of the fandom is like usually pretty chill about it. It's like, oh, I just want to get involved and be part of it and stuff.
And it's been like that. We go to these conventions, of course, and we're meeting fans. And it's fascinating how this show impacted so many millions of people back in 66 and, of course, in the 70s with the reruns and even in the 80s and reruns. But there was a woman that was in Louisville that came around the corner and she stopped and she said, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, oh, my gosh, I can't believe it. And we thought she was just surprised by seeing the car. But it was more about what the car represented to her. And she said, no, you don't understand. My childhood was horrible. It was absolutely a disaster. But the only thing that was good and brought our hopes up was watching the Batman show as a family. We would sit down and watch it every single week. And how important it was to her. And I said, well, the story like that, please. I opened up the ropes and let her pass the ropes to sit in the car.
Awesome.
And she was just about to hyperventilate, and we had to come down and say it's okay. It was one of those moments in time that it's indelibly imprinted.
Well, that's awesome. Because that's like a lot of people have their special attachment or connection with whatever fan thing. I mean, comics, books, movies, TV shows, whatever. And it's really cool when that can manifest to that special moment for them. Because for them, just as much as it was special for you, it's probably even more so for them. And that's awesome.
Right.
Like, I totally support that kind of thing all over the place, all the time, anytime. Because it's a good feely thing.
It really is. You're changing somebody's day for the better just by driving a car past them. If they were having a bad day before, they're not having a bad day, at least for a moment in time, by
exactly.
Watching the car. And people are plastered against the glass at the drive-thru of your favorite restaurant, things like that. People that have owned high-end cars before, like Lamborghinis and Rolls Royces, are absolutely shocked by the difference going to a Batmobile is, a 66 Batmobile. And it's night and day. And they really, until you see it with your own eyes, it's really tough to be able to even wrap your mind around it.
So that car, I'm just guessing. I've never been close. Actually, I've been, okay. Have you ever been to Toronto?
Have
you ever done a show in Toronto?
Yes.
Okay. I might have seen your car there then, like about 10 years ago.
That was not one of mine, but I helped that guy build his car.
That's, oh, okay.
So a lot of my parts made it into that particular vehicle. That was probably that particular vehicle.
Okay.
So that's cool.
I'm just mentioning it because, like, the conventions are cool. And I think about 5 days later from going to that convention, I saw a Batmobile driving down the highway. I was like, oh, that's cool. And then right after that, what was the other one? I can't remember what the other one was. But it was like, oh, that's just really cool. There's two of them. Yeah. Not another Batmobile. It was another TV show. And then the Green Hornet car came by. And it's like, well, shit, where are they going? I want to go there.
You bet. There's so many neat vehicles out there. And you're right that all of those movie star vehicles, those Hollywood star cars, whether it was George Barris, whether it was Dean Jeffries, or whether it was Gene Winfield, all of those fantastic people building those cars back in the 60s and 70s, all of those have now become such a part of our culture that they show up at different conventions and you get to see your childhood right in front of you every single time.
Which is why I was doing the fun thing at the beginning, saying, oh, it was this car or that car or that car. Because you automatically recognize these things and the theme song plays in your head. Less so nowadays for the newer stuff. I mean, name just escaped me and it just really... you mentioned the guy's name, and I can't remember the name of the show right now. Supernatural. Sorry.
Okay.
Their car. Dean's car in that show. I love that car. It's a good, clean, crisp car. But you don't really see the kind of attachment to vehicles nowadays as you did then. I mean, the Fast series of movies, they have all these cars, but do you have the same attachment to them?
Right. Apparently, they are very popular. One of them just sold for $1.2 million, which is hard to imagine. But it's a screen used car, and it was Paul Walker's car. So from the first movie, fairly recently. So I do
collectible.
So there are fans of even the ones that don't attract our attention quite as much. But you're right about the Dukes of Hazzard with the General Lee, or the Black Beauty from Green Hornet, talking about Knight Rider's kit car, Ghostbusters Ecto-1. All of those cars are just iconic, immediate attention getters, and it's really cool.
Do you remember the movie Damnation Alley?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know that they built that thing for real and it was street worthy?
Yes. Yeah.
And it cost them like $2 million or what, I think, in current currency at the time that I last read it, to build that thing.
And it sat outside of the shop for a long time. And
it rotted away.
Wait. Yeah.
And then somebody restored it. There is a whole story about it. But it's like, I would plots if I saw that thing drive by.
Yeah. Oh, what a neat vehicle. And as you said, it was real. And I think that's one of the things that attracts people to the 66 Batmobile versus the others, is that it was based on a real vehicle. It was a drivable car. And most of the other cars, now the 89 you could still drive, but most of the others they're almost entirely CGI anymore. Especially in the most recent ones. So there is a physical car for close-ups and things like that, but to drive it, to actually use it, not so much. And they're too large, too. They won't fit on streets.
Yeah, if you see the Bat Tank, it's like there's no way it segments like that in real life.
Right. And it's 9'6" wide, and the maximum that can go is 8'3". And so you're already too wide for the road. And in fact, the Tumbler, it's not even street legal. You can't put it on the streets at all. You can't even put it on a flatbed trailer without doing an oversized load truck front and rear of it. So a friend of mine found out about that built one. But the 66 Batmobile still continues to attract our attention today. I asked Adam West about that, and he said, well, it was iconic in 55 as a Lincoln Futura, iconic in 65 when George converted it into the Batmobile, and it continues to be iconic for us today. It's so retro that it looks futuristic, like it could happen someday in the future.
I mean, one day we're going to all be driving cars like that, but they'll be fully electric and they'll fly.
There you go.
You'll have a little propeller pop out of the back, go, and it just flies away.
Oh, man, we grew up with the Jetsons. Didn't we think that was going to happen for real?
Yeah. And,
someday within our lifetimes, and instead we're worried about people eating Tide Pods.
Oh, I'm not worried about that. They eat Tide Pods, they die. That's not my problem, and Darwin has had his say on that one.
There you go. Right.
But we do have jetpacks now. The military is playing with them. They're water packs. It's like, I want to try that, but then I would fall and break something, and it's like, I'm too old to deal with that crap. So, still cool.
Isn't that cool? Yeah, with and what we're seeing them do with the drone technology to yep. see vehicles coming along like that. You're right. That is coming soon.
I mean, there's so much cool stuff. The technology advancement cycle is just, it's phenomenal sometimes to think about. Okay, so we shot somebody into space, what was it, 50 years ago? No, less than 50 years ago. But still, the amount of computing power they had access to fits in a tiny pencil that you can have on your desk now. And they still had to have people running numbers on the ground to be able to get that thing to get up, to get down, to get back up, and to get back home.
Right. You look at a movie like Apollo 13, which was based on the real life events, of course, mm-hmm. and you saw them using math, writing it down by hand inside of the capsule, trying to figure out, wait a minute, I think there was a mistake. We're off course by just a tick. And then they had to pilot manually to be able to get. Oh, man.
Yeah.
You're right. Yeah, you're right.
And then we have a movie like Fast 9 where they duct tape a car up and launch it from a plane. It's like, oh, my God. I just facepalm every time I think about that scene now. It's like, oh, my God. But we're not going to dwell on that. So you've done documentaries and you've been involved with other Batmania. There was a documentary movie called Holy Batmania at some point. Or was it just Batmania? No, I've watched it.
Both of those, actually. Yeah. Lots of documentaries over the years. Those two came out in the 1980s, back in VHS days.
Right. That's why I had it. I did have that on VHS.
And they followed a little bit of the history of the Batman TV show. They had some of the interviews and then, of course, appearances by Adam West and Burt Ward back when they were allowed to do so in costume. That all stopped. Warner Brothers nixed all of that in 1989 when the Batman movie with Michael Keaton came out. And just like they did with Clayton Moore with The Lone Ranger, they told him he couldn't dress in costume anymore.
Yeah.
Ranger movie came out, and then it was just Adam and Bert as movie stars showing up to conventions, yet the lines were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that was interesting. They repackaged Adam as Adam West movie star instead of Adam West actor, and it saved his career. He was on Conan O'Brien, I think, 16 times, which is just about a record compared to the other guests that were on that particular show. Was with I was on Politically Incorrect. That's the one that was 16.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Not with Conan. Yeah.
I know the show you're talking about. I can't remember his name right now either.
His name's eluding me at the moment, so sorry about that.
It's okay. Jack will probably show it in the chat there, and I'll pop it up in a second.
Right. He did a terrible movie called Cannibal Women and the Avocado Jungle of Death.
Yes, I love that movie. It's terrible. It's awesome.
It was perfect, but it was perfectly bad, but perfectly good for being
Bill Maher. There we go.
Maher, thank you so much. Yes.
Both Jack and Chuck popped that message up.
Thank you so much, guys. Good job.
See, this is why I like having a chat room, because they can fill in the blanks when, as I get old, I forget things, but the people can fill in the answers.
You bet. So I, with my Magic House Productions filmmaking company, I've shot lots of documentaries. And thanks to Chuck, I got involved with the Gen Con 50th anniversary to do 16 of their documentaries for them on the 50th anniversary of the Gen Con convention. So that was really cool. And then I... if you watch the Batman TV show on DVD or on Blu-ray and you buy the box set, one of them would be a special features disc, and part of that is called Holy Memorabilia. And they didn't shoot enough footage when they came to Indiana, so they asked me to provide additional footage for two of their parts of the documentary that we were involved with. And that was really cool. What a neat feather in the cap. So I get to enjoy working on those kinds of productions as well as our own stuff.
So you know what's cool about that?
What's that?
I have that box set sitting right there about 3 feet from where I'm pointing. And it's like, oh, I've been wanting to get back to watch, because I've had it for like a year now. I just haven't gotten around to rewatching it again. And it's like, oh, now I got another reason to watch that. But that's a long series to watch because that's a big box.
It is. The first season, of course, was the best.
They did
a lot of night photography. They really worked hard on doing the shadows, and the lighting and the color was just spectacular. And it had a little bit more of a serious tone, even though it definitely had the comedic aspects and the camp aspects to it. But by second season, they'd already jumped the shark because of the movie, with the shark literally hanging off of Adam's leg.
Yeah.
The second season's okay, and then you get to the third season and you saw the budget level just drop into the basement, and they just had no money at all for those last 9 episodes in particular. They didn't even have enough money for the Dr. Cassandra episode to be able to choreograph the fight scene, so they turned off the lights to be able
to... Biff, Pam, pow! And that was it. Everybody's done.
Oh, so...
Yeah.
But, man, it's so crisp and so clear, especially on Blu-ray, to see it. And they struck everything from the original negatives, went back. They didn't use any washed-out stuff. So if you've not seen the TV show in a long, long time, you owe it to yourself to pick up that set and watch that.
Well, damn. Now I'm going to have to watch it again. But... The funny thing about that was one of my favorite actors is one of the villains in the Batman series. Vincent Price plays Egghead.
Oh, he was great.
He was awesome. What was even funnier is watching him with Burt Ward on Family Feud when they did the Hollywood edition.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about that. Yes.
I watched that a year ago, and I was like, I was busting my ass laughing watching that, because that was awesome.
Oh, Vincent was great. Yeah, he really was neat as the most intelligent of the villains. He actually deduced, as you recall, he deduced that Bruce Wayne had to be Batman, and he had a brain transferometer gizmo that he was going to learn all of the secrets in Bruce Wayne's brain and find out for sure if he was Batman. And that was the cliffhanger. And what a neat show, and what a neat premise to have the villain actually work it out.
As opposed to Superman and Clark Kent's glasses. Eyes over the eyes, fingers over the eyes. Yeah, that's Clark Kent. No, that can't be Clark Kent. Yeah. Which is even funnier when they make the joke of it in the movie Mystery Men. It's like, yeah, no, that was funny.
Oh, that was a good movie, too. I was surprised that didn't do better at the box office. I really expected that one to take off more. Well, but maybe the timing.
I think it missed in America. Because my understanding about humor, Canadian, British, we really like dry humor. And in America, it's less on the dry humor, like the British style. And it's more on the slapstick.
Right.
That's wide audience, narrow audience comparisons or whatever. It's really not always technically exact, but stuff is stuff. It's all kinds of weird stuff that makes it. Paranormal Activity made it on a $16,000 budget and made over $10 million in first weekend or whatever.
There you go.
But it's crazy stuff.
I think that's why movies like Guardians of the Galaxy came in kind of sideways compared to the rest of the superhero movies.
Mm-hmm.
It's a more irreverent version of a superhero movie and that kind of thing. And I think that's one of the reasons why it struck so well and was so successful, was because it was just a little bit different than the others. Perhaps the original Shazam movie, not so much the sequel, but the original one, and maybe that was the kind of thing too, that it was okay to have fun in a movie. that it didn't have to always be dark and gloomy and things like that in a superhero film. Made it stand out just a little bit more, but I don't know. It's an interesting Batman worked on so many different levels. You had the action adventure for the kids, the 66 Batman, and then you had the comedy for the adults. But Batman's so resilient. You can have a Michael Keaton Batman, and you can have a Christian Bale Batman, and you can have Pattinson Batman, and it seems to work, or animated series.
And I've seen all of those guys.
Yeah.
The movies.
There you go. So it's really neat to see how all of this is working out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the last couple of days I've also been watching the Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy show, and Batman shows up every once in a while, and it's like, that's a different Batman. But that's still a cool Batman.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and DC... okay. So, I'm a comic guy. Big time, long time. Have been for a long time.
Right.
I gravitate more to Marvel than I do to DC. And DC's characters that I tend to gravitate to are the Stranger characters. I mean, characters for me in DC's world, there's like the Spectre, Zatanna, Swamp Thing, Dr. Fate. The odd characters. And these are the ones like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. They're okay as concepts and stuff like that. But for me, I've never really gotten into reading them. Except when they went left of center. My favorite Superman story is Red Son.
Okay, yep, yep.
And I think my favorite Wonder Woman story is the one where she gets thrown into a mental asylum for a while. And Batman... Oh, Batman, when he's a vampire. That was cool.
Oh, wow.
But see, DC's Elseworlds was great stuff.
Remember
but
those
a lot things. Of their main line, it didn't grab me.
Well, I have to ask, in Marvel, who are your heroes then? Who are your favorite characters?
My big ones are things like Silver Surfer, all of the Guardians, the original Guardians of the Galaxies, not the ones at the movies.
Okay.
Because it's a completely different spectrum of characters.
True.
Doctor Strange, Deathlock, Warlock. There's a handful of them. There's probably more in the Marvel universe that I gravitate to than in the DC. But again, there's still big space, magic, horror stuff. And
right.
It's the same side of thing. That's where I generally travel to. But I've read a lot of different stuff.
So it's not Captain America. It's not Iron Man and Hulk.
Hulk?
And that side of it.
The series that they came out with a little while ago, Immortal Hulk, awesome series. But most of the other Hulk stuff, less so for me.
Got it.
But I'm a big fan of the fact that the reason there is so much different stuff out there is that there is variety for everyone, because not everyone likes the same stuff, and if everyone did like the stuff, we'd be boring as heck.
Right.
So
again, it goes back to the resilience, and I love how comics can do that.
Yeah,
to range from being silly all the way to being super dramatic and being and all of that. It really is neat. And I got into comics because of the TV show, not the other way around. I came in to the comic scene perhaps a tiny bit late, but that really introduced a whole new world to me that I didn't even know really had existed.
There are so many different types of stories out there. I mean, right now there's a James Bond series of comics that have been going out. I like a whole bunch of them. I mean, one of my favorite series is Saga and Black Science, and they deal with alternative science stuff, and it's just neat. There's like, I don't know, both Marvel and DC put out about 50 different titles every month collectively between whatever it is that they're putting out. And then you've got Image, Dark Horse, you've got all these other new publishers coming out. I mean, you've got Coffin Comics, which is doing all the Lady Death stuff, and it's like, oh, that stuff's fun, and variety of stuff. And there's so much out there. I mean, if you have a particular passion or a penchant for something, there is a comic book out there for you.
Right. I remember meeting the guys that were behind Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Eastman and crew?
It was still in black and white at the time. And this was back in about 85, probably. And it was so neat to catch them at a little itty-bitty comic convention in Michigan, where I met Adam for the first time. And saw them, and I just said, hey, you know, it's not my thing, but I wish you all the luck in the world. Well, it became my thing when I saw their first movie, and I went, oh my gosh, this is amazing. No wonder it's so successful. And,
so you know what comic came out this week?
What's that?
Street Fighter TMNT crossover.
Oh, so good grief.
The publisher has been doing this weird experimentation with crossover stuff with the Ninja Turtles with everybody. So we had a Godzilla. We had a Power Rangers. There was another one as well. Oh, they're Batman. They've had three different Batman series with the Ninja Turtles. I've seen. Right now, they've got Street Fighter. And there's another one coming out that was weird as heck, too. It's like, what? Was it Archie? I think the Ninja Turtles and Archie? I don't remember what the other one was. But it was like, that wouldn't... I would not read that. I would read that.
Yes.
Because I did read the Street Fighter one. It's like, oh my god, I don't know where they're going with this, but it looks silly. It's like, okay. But it's that's what I'm saying. There's a range.
Yeah.
I mean, movies, you can have the stupidest thing going. I love the movie Cocaine Bear, by the way. And it's like, it's a really stupid movie, but it's hilarious and it works. And then you can have high art movies like Dune, that we're looking forward to the second movie coming out later this year. And I just watched the new Spider-Verse movie the other day, and I was like, this is fantastic stuff.
It was good.
And I just watched another bad movie as well.
What was the other bad movie?
I'm trying to remember.
Okay.
It's one of those things. I write this stuff down so that's like, oh, yeah, that's what I was doing. Okay, I can actually probably queue it up if I want to. Just got to move that over to there, move this over to here. Let's see, what was it? By the way, did you get an opportunity to check out the picture I shared for your coming on the show?
I have not, no.
You need to get more pictures of you in front of the car. Oh, Asterix and Obelix, the Middle Kingdom.
Oh, wow, okay.
It's actually funny as hell. I was laughing my ass off the entire time. It's not a bad movie, but it's obviously they understood the roots, and it worked for me. I mean, I think it's hilarious.
All right. Well, definitely.
I think everybody should watch it. It's on Netflix.
Okay. Thank you.
And it's not even the first live-action Obelix and Asterix and Obelix movie. I think it's like the third one. The first two were not great, but they have a lot of the same people in it. I think they actually really did a much better job on this one.
And that's okay. Each movie is a stepping stone, right? To get to the next one, to get to the, as each one, the budget increases and the skill level increases, the experience. Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah, I mean, movie making, TV making, it's like, if you can understand the story you're trying to put through, it doesn't always need to be super huge, mega buck production budget. Or it doesn't need to be the super simple micro. I've seen a movie that had a $182 budget. And I always remember this movie, and that was the reason why, because that's why I watched this movie. I was like, $182. Okay, I have to watch this movie. I just want to know how you got $182, because I'm pretty sure friends, family, everybody pitched in, and the only thing they paid for was like basic stuff or whatever. But it was a bad movie. But it was funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you could tell they enjoyed themselves doing it. They were obviously trying to do something with it, and it's like, it's fine, but you can tell the budget is just reeking right through everything.
Oh man, wow, it's a blast.
But yeah, I love that stuff.
I do too. And some of the cheesiest movies of all time are some of the most enjoyable, so you know, it's but, you know, and then you've got the contrast, you know, Hollywood spending sometimes $250, $300 million on a movie. Yep. And you look at the publicity and the expenses that are going to be incurred there, and you wonder, holy cats, if a movie doesn't break $500 million at the box office or $600 million, that it isn't even going to break even.
Yep.
Just hard to comprehend that we've gotten to that point.
There was an interview with, Lucas and the other one.
Spielberg.
Actually, it was Spielberg, yes. Spielberg, and I think Lucas came on afterwards. And they were talking about how there was going to be a huge implosion in the Hollywood movie production business, because all of these tentpole movies, as they call it, get bigger and bigger and bigger. And at some point, two or three of them are going to start flopping. And then when that happens, the entire system that supports that process is going to collapse because it can't afford two or three or four failures. But one, no problem. Yeah. That's the way Hollywood math works. It's like, you know that they're losing money somewhere so that they can make money somewhere else.
Right.
They have the creative tax math classes down there in Hollywood. So I do have to ask one question, because somebody's posted this thing in the chat and it just reminded me. Do you have, on the cars that you build, the light-up rocket thing at the back?
Yes, it's a working flamethrower out the rear of the car, just like it was on the original show. George Barris used butane. We use propane in our cars.
So yeah, propane's so much safer.
It works just like a propane grill as far as the function goes, but there's a hidden switch under the dash that turns on a gas actuator, and then there's a push button to be able to strike and get the spark going, and then the flame shoots out about a foot and a half, just like it did on the original show. And it's a giggle factor on high, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I would love to see that here in Canada, but I think they would make that not street legal. I'm pretty sure of it, because they got rules up here on road stuff. It's like, I can see one cop saying, that's cool, and then the other cop saying, that's illegal.
Probably so.
Yeah. But it would be neat as hell. I mean, it would be worth it, at least once.
Then the second feature that really gets people's attention is that gold fly swatter thing between the front windshields. It's called the bat beam on the show. And that raises and lowers on a power antenna. But apparently everybody on the planet has forgotten that power antennae existed. And so everybody's going, oh, I'm going to take pictures of that. We're like, oh, okay. Yep. All right. Here we go. So I turned the knob and raised the bat beam again for them. But a lot of the other features on the car work too. You know, everything that was science fiction back in 66, we can do for real now with electric actuators to raise the trunk and the hood. The roll top dash conceals a TV screen that's an LCD screen that can be used for DVD movies, or it can be the backup camera. We have the remote back computer switch, which was basically the world's first Wi-Fi hotspot. And then down below, we have the bat phone on the transmission tunnel. And theirs, of course, was just a prop that lit up with an AC power cord plugged into a wall. Ours is actually functional as a blinking, beeping Bluetooth Batmobile bat phone.
Yeah, imagine some of the crazy stuff they could put into a car like that nowadays if they wanted to use today's modern technology.
You bet. And that's one of the things that James Bond was finding hard to do, was that to always be on the edge of the scientific knowledge and where the technology was going. And now, now they hardly even do gadgets at all, because they can't think of anything that's apparently further ahead in technology than where we are today. And it really did make it tough on them. Well, part of it, of course, is the personality of Bond. They wanted him to work it out instead of relying on a gadget. So I cannot get that too.
Yeah, no, the whole Deus Ex Machina process of, like, yeah, we can save the day, press this button, boom. Okay, solve the day, villain's bad, we all go home. I mean, you've seen Moonraker, obviously. Like the height of the whole Bond technology wheel. And then after that, they came back to something that was really down to earth. I can't remember what it was.
For Your Eyes Only was the next one.
Right. That's it. Yeah. And that was
the earth and very non-gadgety.
And I think the one after that, that was Pierce Brosnan one, where they were in Prague, right? With the tank that busts through the truck with the water bottles. I love that scene.
Several movies later, but yes.
Okay.
So yeah, you had For Your Eyes Only, then you had Octopussy, then A View to a Kill, and then that wrapped up Roger Moore. Then you moved into Timothy Dalton with his movies. He had, I think, two, if I remember correctly.
Then two is what I remember.
Then you move into Pierce Brosnan with GoldenEye, and what a rebound that was. That was amazing. I so enjoyed that.
They've all been good movies. I mean, I ended up picking up the box set there a couple years ago, and I watched them all in a row. And I was less a Daniel Craig guy, but I really liked everybody else before them.
Yes. Yes. And I thought Daniel did okay with it. It's just they changed the character yet again.
Yes.
To where he was in, and he was basically Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
And you could have plugged in any action star and any character, and it would have been fine. But to call him James Bond and not to have anything regarding James Bond in it.
Yes, exactly that.
It's a little harsh.
There's so many things you can do with the character, and I'm personally good with interpretations, reinterpreting, as long as you make it a good one.
Yeah.
And then when you make it kind of okay, then it kind of defeats the whole purpose. And yeah, it's a thing.
Right.
But so,
Casino Royale was a lot of fun, I thought.
Yes.
His first one, but I didn't go for the other so much.
I liked his last one. Not the last one. Spectre. Spectre I liked. Because you had the whole range of true emotional contact and impact going. I mean, that's the one where Judi Dench as M buys it, gets killed.
Oh,
spoiler alert!
Skyfall.
That one, yeah.
That one was good. Yes.
That one was the return to classic Bond, and it's like I like this one, and I could buy him as Bond in this one. But the ones before, it's like, it looks like a thug.
Right.
I mean, I like him in other stuff. I really like him in other stuff, but it was like as Bond, it wasn't working for me. But yeah, I can talk about movies all day long. I'm sure you can as well.
Indeed.
So I'm going to get into some very specific questions that I always ask all of my guests that come on.
Okay.
What's your favorite kind of cookie?
Oh, peanut butter.
Okay. We can't eat in the same place. What's your favorite comic book?
Oh my goodness. Wow. It would have to be Batman.
Which one?
Any of them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you still collecting them?
I stopped back in about the 80s when they broke Batman's back and
man.
Had Azrael take over and this, that, and the other. That was about the end of my collecting days, but I still have a pretty sizable collection. Nothing, I'm sure, compared to most of your listeners, but still have quite a few.
Excellent. So if you have the Vengeance of Bane comic, it's worth a couple of bucks.
Nice.
The one where he broke Batman's back. So,
okay.
Now, it's not the most expensive Batman book. That would be like Detective Comics number 4, I think. And for a couple of million on auction a little while ago.
Yeah, number 27, Batman's first appearance.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, that one for like, what, 26 million or something like that? But it's like a near mint grading of like 9.2 or something like that, which is, there's like 3 of them in the world or whatever. And it's like, yeah, I'm never going to touch that. And even if it did, it's probably going to be in plastic wrapping and protected in such a way that it's like,
Right.
Which is probably for the best, because I can read it online, or I can buy the replica copies. It's easier to read that way. Less expensive, too.
Right.
So is there anything you really wanted to push? Like, do you want to say good things about dogs or something like that? Or is there anything you really want to... I'm not going to get into political stuff, but...
No, definitely not. I did want to talk a tiny bit. I've got an upcoming Batman Museum in Logansport, Indiana. I'm hoping to open it towards the end of this year. And this is going to be a two-story museum that's going to be about somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000 square feet of items on display. So I've been collecting since I was 2 years old, and I have almost everything from back when I was a kid doing that collecting. And of course, over the years, I've accumulated quite a bit of memorabilia. And I've built a full-scale version of the Wayne Manor study, complete with sliding bookcase and the Shakespeare bust and the bat phone. And then a small theater that'll be running documentaries about the Batman television show, the 1955 Lincoln Futura, Fiberglass Freaks, George Barris and the Batmobile, as well as Logansport Automotive History. And then you can move into the Rogues Gallery, where there'd be statues of Joker, Riddler, Penguin, and Catwoman. And people would be able to stand next to them for photographs, along with seeing the memorabilia on display. You go downstairs, and you're in the Batcave. And you get to see bat computer equipment around. You see a full-scale Batmobile. And there will be a Batman cycle, a Batgirl cycle. And then my first Batmobile, the one I built when I was 17, I still have that one, and it will be on display. And then you head up the stairway, and you're in the gift shop.
Cool. So you've turned this into a whole little tidy business.
That's the plan.
Excellent.
So we'll see what happens. But
so when does that open?
I'm hoping to open in September if the stars align and all of that. When the planets align. So we'll have to see, for back to school. Yes. Hall of Heroes, which is in northern Indiana, almost to the border to Michigan, they have a general type of museum for all superheroes, and they've done exceptionally well. And it's really neat to see what they've done, and I'm hoping that we will fill a little different niche by being Batman-centric and see what we can do.
Well, I'm sure you'll get lots of Batman fans running through there because they love that stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Where does he get all those marvelous little gadgets? Everybody quotes that one, I'm sure, because I would. It's like, I love that line.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
Yeah.
Love it. But good stuff. But, you know, that's the main thing that I wanted to talk about before we closed up here, was just to mention what we've got that cooking. And that if somebody does want to come into Logansport for a tour of the Batmobile factory, they can give me a call and set up a date and a time. I'd like to do it by appointment. I am here 7 days a week, but I'm also have other businesses that I need to attend to. So if they want to call the business number 574-722-3237, that they can set up an appointment and we can do a tour for them. We have currently 9 Batmobiles in various stages of construction for them to be able to see, from a car body that is ready to mount to a chassis all the way through a painted car that's 99% done and ready to ship out.
Very cool. Did you get that, kids? Did you get that phone number?
574-722-3237.
Biff, pow, wham! Did you ever hear of Forrest J. Ackerman?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, because he used to do apparently the same thing. I mean, he was a huge collector of all kinds of stuff. And if you reached out a little bit before, he's like, yeah, come on in, look at stuff. I'll let you.
Oh, yeah. Man, Famous Monsters of Filmland, that was one of those early magazines that I really gravitated towards, that and Starlog, and just enjoyed reading those so much back in the day.
Starlog has changed so much. They kind of died for a while, but then they came back, and it's like, this is now a weird magazine.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They went completely UFO conspiracy series side.
No.
Yeah. I picked up a couple a little while ago, and I was like, what the heck? I was like, okay. They had a series of comic books, so it's like, okay, I brought those in, and I was reading those, and it's like, oh, this is cool. It's like, okay, weird.
Oh, good grief. Wow. Say,
not everything for everyone. But yeah, no, I used to collect those magazines as well, because I'd pull them out. There was a one called Future, which did a lot of science fiction artwork, and I love that stuff.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Yeah, they always had a centerfold, and it wasn't a nudie centerfold. It was a science fiction centerfold. It's like, this is awesome. It's going up on the wall, right beside the Farrah Fawcett poster.
Nice.
It's like, you know what it was like. It was in the 80s and 70s and whatever. It was like, it was what it was.
You bet.
I'm not worried about going overtime here right now, because there's nobody usually on after me, and it's like, oh, it started late, show station, it's a problem, and I think there's only a couple of us who are hosts on the station that have remote access, the way that both me, apparently Mark's show before us was running just fine, and I must have timed it just right afterwards. It's like, okay, we got in a lock.
Yay. Well, thank you.
National Enquirer presents Starlog, apparently, according to Jack. Which sounds about right. And Chuck suggested bringing you on again when your museum is up and running or about to be up and running. If you're interested, more than happy to bring you back on.
Happy to. That would be awesome.
Because it's like, I'm all about pop culture and genre stuff and everything. And as I tell everybody, it's like about comic books, horror, and whatever the hell else I feel like talking about. I think one day I'm going to do an episode that's really going to freak the crap out of people and just talk about squirrels. Which is funny, because I have done that.
You're awesome.
Thank you very much. You're actually awesome for coming on. Thank you very much. I appreciate it tremendously.
Thank you.
Sharing the joys of Batmobiles.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and to the Batmobile. Let's go.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to do the Batman.
Oh. A Batman.
There you go. Did you enjoy the last Pattinson Batman movie? Because I liked it.
It was all right. Yeah. Much better than I expected. I came in with,
no
preconceived notions. Just let the movie be what it was. And it was much better than I expected it to be.
It exceeded my expectations because they were really low.
Yeah, I understand. Which is good. Yeah. I'm really looking forward to The Flash in a couple of weeks, so hopefully that turns out to be the spectacle that they're saying it will be.
Well, we got Keaton in it, so like, okay, I'll give it a shot. We'll see how it goes. Again, thanks for coming on. Everybody else there in After Rot Land, have yourself an amazing good time. It was amazing that we got through these technical difficulties. And come back again every Wednesday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, or whatever the hell time it is, wherever the hell you are. Find us on the Facebook, find us on the Twitter, find us on the Instagram. You know the whole deal. Just go ahead and deal with it. Now I'm going to play the outro.